How many of you are taking dental radiographs? Pretty hard not to. How many are not taking dental radiographs? Okay, there are some. All right. How many can tell me what a 104 is? Tooth 104. Hey, this is the first. Raise them high, because I think this is about the first group I've ever had that have more than half. Usually it's like 10%, 15%. Could you tell him we're getting feedback here and see if we can fix it? 104 is the right maxillary canine tooth. First quadrant, 1. Second quadrant, 200, 300, 400. Lower right is 400. Tooth numbers start in the center as 01 as the central incisor. 04 would be the canine tooth. So 100 series be the right side, 04 would be the canine. And that's called the triadent system, a real quick abbreviation system that we use in veterinary dentistry. Getting some feedback here. Thank you. I wanted to, AHA is a leader, and this is something that's really, really, really new. I guarantee you won't see this anywhere else at this meeting. This is hot off the press. Has nothing to do with dentistry, though. I warn you. And here it is. Bow Wow Talks. This product will change the disposition of this to this. And it'll also change the skin as well. It's a miracle, isn't it? Okay, seriously. You can find anything on the internet you want to find. Advanced veterinary dentistry was introduced long to veterinarians 30 years ago or so. And actually with AHA that was responsible for doing that. Still today, there are practices not taking dental radiographs. And there's many reasons to take dental radiographs. First, let's look at it for the sake of the patient. Frank Verstrati, when he came to Davis, probably in the mid-90s, made an edict saying all patients going into the veterinary dental service shall have full mouth intraoral x-rays taken. And then he went back in earlier than that, but went back in 1998, he published a study where he had done a retrospective study on his findings. What percent of teeth would you say were there without lesions yielded incidental or clinically important findings? What percent would you say? No clinical findings, and you would take an x-ray, how often would you find pathology on an x-ray? 10%? Would that be good? You'd be happy with 10%? Would you be happy with 20%? 28% of clinically normal patients, he found pathology that he would never have seen without taking a dental x-ray. That's the dog. He also reported in cats. Well, that's higher than that, isn't it? 42% of cats. Almost 50% of cats having lesion, have if normal mouths have incidental findings on a radiograph that you'll find that you'll never see if you just get them under anesthetic, clean their teeth, wake them up without taking those x-rays. 10 cats go through your practice, you haven't taken an x-ray, you're going to miss 4 of them. So indications for taking x-rays, unerupted or impacted teeth, periodontal disease, endodontics, exodontics. I can't extract teeth without taking dental x-rays. And if a specialist can't extract teeth without dental x-rays, how can a general practitioner do it? Doesn't make any sense. Neoplasia. Likewise, can't treat neoplasia without taking films. So uninterrupted or impacted teeth. Here's a patient I had mentioned. What's wrong with this picture? Anybody give me an idea here, what we're seeing? Something wrong there? What is that? Deciduous teeth, primary tooth. Well, this patient has primary teeth extracted when it was a puppy. What happened? Whoops, we extracted the wrong tooth. Dental x-rays weren't taken. Bad day, yeah. So, taken prior to extractions, persistent primary teeth, make sure you get the right ones. Periodontal disease, prior to treatment. What's the best treatment? If we had this patient, and I should have a clinical picture, but his gums look fairly normal, but he has some pockets. Let's just throw some Doxyrobe in there. Treat it. Is that going to work? No. We've got a tremendous amount of bone loss here. This tooth is not doing this patient any favors. It needs to go what Ed Eisner calls ITB. Anybody know what ITB is? In the bucket. Endodontics, essential for endodontic disease. Here we have guttapercha in place and we're evaluating our fill. To document progress, prior, during, and after root canal therapy. Exodontics, predict complications, fractured roots. Anyone see the retained root fragments here? Three of them. We'll talk about radiographic interpretation, but I'll just throw that out to you. This patient had a facial swelling, and it had a fractured fourth premolar, and we thought, well, we're going to go in here, and we're going to do a root canal on this fourth premolar, and this patient's going to all be well. So we take our radiograph, and yep, we got an abscess there. At least we have lytic bone, lytic tooth. And which side is this? Always when you're posting radiographs, you post them as if you were looking at the patient. So this tooth here is which one? Fourth premolar. Everybody agree there? That's the first molar. Everybody agree with that? So therefore, we're looking at the left side of the patient. But look there. Turned out to be an osteosarcoma. Changed the whole ball game with that bone involvement that we picked up on the x-ray. The swelling easily could have been accounted for with an abscessed tooth. And if we would have just gone ahead and said, oh, there's swelling there, a fractured tooth, extract the tooth, and the swelling continues. I mean, looking back at the patient, yeah, you would see soft tissue swelling, but you would also see that fracture there. You could also be lulled into the whole thing of saying, oh, that swelling and all is just the result of the infection that's been going on there. It's a nasty infection. And without that x-ray showing that bone production, you would not, most likely not be, you'd walk right into that. I see this all the time. The clients come in, patients come in, a tooth has been loose, it's been extracted, particularly in cats. A loose tooth, extract the tooth, don't take x-rays, and then, you know, the never heals. So they come in and we take a look at them. And oops, now we got a biopsy. Squamous cell carcinoma.
So can you tell that's not just inflammation, but it is a tumor just by looking at the
bone? Yes. Yeah, that's bony production there. Yeah. Almost your starburst. Take in oral radiographs for the sake of the practice. You want a little tip. If you want to drive a veterinary dentist crazy, just say you've done a dental. And I imagine that foreman was crazy over this. The guy being too lazy to get, you know, that's not my job. And then another way, besides calling it a dental, is say you can't take dental x-rays. That really drives us crazy on Ben. Anybody can take dental x-rays. All it requires is buying dental x-ray film. And you can develop it with the, even in large films, the size 4 films, you could put it in your automatic processors. Or you can use a solution from the automatic processor, or you can buy, you know, for less than $50 solution and go into the darkroom and develop it. Or you could spend $200 and buy a chair-side darkroom and develop regular film with your dental x-ray units. It's all possible. So that really drives us crazy. What really drives us crazy is what it's costing the veterinarian who says, I can't afford to take dental x-rays. What he can't afford to take dental x-rays because you're not taking dental x-rays and you can't afford to do it. Only people who have a dental x-ray unit that aren't making any money are those that continue doing the same thing that they've been doing and not taking the dental x-rays. If you start taking x-rays, it's going to pay for itself. So the patient benefits and the practice is going to benefit. So you're losing money by not taking. You're just too lazy like this guy was to learn. Let's do some numbers here. Let's say you just kind of some assumptions and roundups and try to make it easy. 10 patients a day, 2 are for dental procedures. And really, your practice should have somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 25% of your gross from dental procedures. When I was in the general practice and a specialist in the general practice, when things got slow in the specialty practice, which wasn't that often, I would just say, okay, I'll go ahead and see a few vaccinations. And I'd be busy for the rest of the week. It didn't take that much by just opening and looking at the mouth. You know, my associates, my partners weren't looking hard enough, and they weren't looking. If you can't see 3 things in the mouth, you're not looking hard enough. It's there. One day we had... We used to have a kennel next door to this practice. And I went next door, and we went, and I just had the technician lift the lip and took the picture. This was in the days of slide film. And it was 24 exposure film. Of the 24 exposures, 21 of them came out. Of the 21 that we took out, and there was no pre-screening, it was just open, look, bang, we found 2 normal patients. 19 patients had some problems in that kennel that weren't being diagnosed. So, I say that it should be at least, let's say we're going to use for this calculations 2 dental procedures a day. And you can figure this out for your own, with your own practice. So 2 cases a day. So if we're taking 10 radiographs a day, 10 times 2 is 20. Say we're working 20 days a month. So radiographs a month, 20. Times 20 films, that's 400 films. Let's say half of them are size 4 films. I'm going to talk about size of film a little bit, but the larger size film is size 4, smaller size film is size 2. So 400 divided by 2 is 200. And number 2 size films, same as E, so it's half of that. So they come 25 to a pack, so that's 8 packs. 200, the size 2 film come 150 per pack, so that's 1.3 packs. So the cost of size 4 films is around $40, maybe it's 45, maybe a little more. So that's $320. So the cost of the size 2 films is 1.3 times 40 is $50. So the total cost of films are 320 plus 50. The waiting and processing, there's 400 films times 2 minutes per film. That's 800 minutes. Convert to hours. 800 divided by 60 is 13.3 hours spent to develop. Technician costs 13.3 hours times, say, $20 an hour. 370 or 275. So you have the cost of film of 320 plus 50 plus 275, about 640. And 645 in our example here. Income per cases, let's say you were charging $100 per case. We charge more than that, but say it's 100 times 20 is $2,000 a month on the income. Income minus expenses leaves about $1,365 that pays for the x-ray unit, which is about $3,000, the doctor's time, the overhead, the profit, etc. So clearly, if you're taking x-rays and charging for them properly, you should be able to make this a profit center. So now the patient's going to benefit by having the x-rays done. The practice can afford it and is actually losing money by not taking it. So these fees are for illustration only, and actually we charge more than that per x-ray case. And it all depends on the patient's size and all, too. You can have dental x-ray machines, which you move the patient's head and the machine head. The dental machine is easier, therefore you're going to do more. The veterinary medical units can be used for these x-rays. I use one a 65 kVp, 50 ma, 1/10 of a second is where I usually will start out with regular veterinary medical type of unit using the size 4 or size 2 film. But you can have mounted x-ray units. This one's mounted to the wall here. These are x-rays on stands. So they can move around the various areas in the clinic, in a hospital. This is the side you want to have aiming toward the subject. This is where your weight has to go over the legs. If you position it the way this one is facing, this is the x-ray unit that falls down on its face when the arm goes out. So it should really be, this is sort of a demonstration type. Turn it around when you're actually using it. This is a Nomad unit. This is a portable x-ray unit. And as I had mentioned, that sea lion planting that kiss, this is after we took x-rays of her. But it's a portable unit that we can use in the field. It uses 18-volt batteries like Makita rechargeable batteries. It's my ray gun. I always wanted to have a ray gun. Now I have a ray gun. Yes. The drawbacks are it's not as powerful. It's only on for a certain period of time. These you can set up and you can, you know, take your time and position and everything else. And you might have, you know, if you're using digital, it may turn itself off after five minutes. But if you're using regular sensor, it stays on there pretty well for a long time. This gives you about 15 seconds. And one of the things we had concern with the sea lion, it goes beep, beep, beep when it's on, when it's armed and ready to go, it's beeping at you. You're probably not, you know, you're certainly closer to the patient, so I'd be more concerned about scatter radiation and doing it every day. Taking this out onto a pool deck and working out of the sea lion is not a good idea. And plus, it's 110 power and the dangers associated with that, so, yeah. The Nomad is sold by a company called Great Lakes. I don't know if they're going to be here or not. I saw them in the Western States, but there are different types of triggers for x-ray units. You have some that have used tenths and hundredths, and you have some that have these little scales here where you press on the tooth that you're being x-rayed. This takes a little bit more getting used to using this type of a timer system than just looking at it and saying, well, it's a tenth of a second or a hundredth of a second or whatever it is. You'll also find x-ray units that use pulses. A Gendex is one of those. We have one Gendex unit in our practice. A pulse is 1/60th of a second. So if you ever come across a used unit or something like that, and it's just has numbers like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, it's pulses. And a pulse is 1/10th of a second. So 6 pulses would be 1/10 of a second. That's not right. A pulse is 1/60th of a second. Sorry. A pulse is 1/60th of a second. 6 pulses would be 1/10 of a second. And then this uses a chart to determine what your exposure is going to be. I like the timer. That's the easier way to do it. I think in terms of tenths of seconds, hundredths of seconds, rather than playing around with dials. Intraoral film is inexpensive, it's small, it processes in 1 to 2 minutes. It gives you great detail. And here we have intraoral film here. We have a layer of plastic coating, a layer of paper, the film itself, layer of paper, the lead, paper plastic covering. Comes in a variety of sizes. To cut to the chase, I keep it simple, use just size 2 and size 4. You can get all these other sizes if you like to do that. Just you know, knock yourself out. But keep it easy. Size 2 and size 4, you can pretty well do most everything. Digital. How many are using digital here? Jeez, I'm preaching to the choir here. I can't afford that as the response of most people. Well, think again, as most of you have seen. If you're thinking digital is expensive, it's a user error, replace the user. It replaces that $645 cost of film. And it also gives you that instant gratification. You can either or instant rejection. You know, it's agony or ecstasy or whatever that is. Agony of defeat, or you can see if your film is good right away. It'll have less staff time, less of your time, just instant results are a big thing here. There's two types of sensors that are commonly used, the CCD and the CMOS. The CCD stands for a charge coupled device. CMOS is a complementary metal oxide semiconductor. Most of them now are CMOS sensors. Both sensors, though, work fundamentally the same. The sensor plate is attached to a computer. The image is immediately displayed on the computer. Sensors are expensive, though, only come in periapical film size. So they're only available in size 2 as far as sensors. Now, I'll talk about their alternative to sensors in just a second that you can go digital with as well. But for practically speaking, it's just these digital sensors. Requires software. Training is important. One manufacturer even has a wireless sensor. Another manufacturer has a Bluetooth sensor. There's a wireless sensor that it's all it is it goes right in the mouth. It's transmitted wirelessly to your internet system in the practice, and that goes onto the computer. Another system is a Bluetooth system that has wires, but it's sent to the computer by Bluetooth, so you don't have to worry about someone pulling the sensor out of the mouth as soon as you walk away from the patient. Digital sensor, other alternatives from the human dental side than what we have in human dentistry, much more expensive and probably not necessary for the average veterinary practice. This is a CRA newsletter, gives you a good summary, and you can get old newsletters online. It's www.cranews.com. Phosphorus plate is an alternative. If that size, not having size 4 films bothers you, you can go to a phosphorus plate like we have here. It has all sizes of dental film, but you have to remove it from the mouth. So that takes some more additional time in processing. It goes into this little device here, and then it gets read and sent to the computer and does the same thing as a sensor. You also lose the advantage of you having now. You have to go back and reposition it back in the mouth again if you had a positioning error to begin with. So only one, the All-Pro ScanX, has size 4 sensors. They used to be about $2,000. I saw this at Western States, and they're down to about $10,000 now. So the price for the phosphorus plates has gone down. So advantage has a size 4 film. Disadvantage must remove from the mouth to process. So what's happening here is when the radiation is received, you have a charge. And these are kind of a simplified version of a bunch of pixels here. The black being the number 10, and the white being number 1, and grays being 5 in between. And so the sensor and computer is assigning a darkness scale on each pixel. That's transmitted to the computer. The computer then uses this darkness scale to reconstruct the image, setting the density of the maximum pixels on the screen or printed page. So I've kind of faked this white tooth here along with gray bone and darkness to give you an idea of the tens and the ones and the fives in between. And then this is converted to a file. The file is stored in a computer in the form of proprietary. Each manufacturer has their own system or commonly used programs like GIF and JPEG and BMP. One of the things to look for is to make sure that your digital system does convert your files to JPEG, the .jpg, so that you can be using it, looking at it in other programs. So if you can't use it as a JPEG, you can't export it, and it's a problem. The file data size, you'll see how many bytes of data is in the file, 100K, 300K, 180K, all these numbers. It's a function of the quality of the image and the physical size of the file that the file can generate, of the image the file can generate. It's important in the storage and the files and the output of the image. How big of a hard drive will you need? So the quality of the image, you have two qualities here. How much detail? Of course, the upper one has a lot of detail and the lower one has very little degree detail. Upper one's going to take a lot more file size to store than the lower one. But if you take the same file and shrink it down smaller, you might get away with the smaller file size. Physical size. So here we've shrunk this down to a smaller size, and the detail for a smaller size is not necessary as it is for the bigger size. And the bigger size is going to take a lot more space on your computer. Digital monitors or laptops, the whole thing on digital is the monitor. That's probably the most important thing that you can do. You can have a great sensor and a lousy monitor. I would much rather have a lousy sensor and a great monitor. I'd like to have a great sensor and a great monitor, but given the choice between the two, if you can't really see it, it's really hard to work with. CRT screens, cathode ray screens, or cathode ray tubes had been the standard, but the LCD plasma screens are coming along to the point where they're almost better than the CRTs. Generally, the more you spend, the higher quality of the image. So when you're buying a laptop for this type of process, you want to make sure you have that it has a good video card, that it has a good monitor to be viewing. Generally, the best thing you can do is ask the manufacturer of the sensor, what's the minimum standards do you want to see on the laptop? I'd mentioned we can take x-rays with veterinary medical machines. You're moving the patient's head. Takes more time, ties up space, less likely to do. Want to use caution when taking x-rays? Personnel should be protected. We're not going to aim the tube at anybody in any circumstances, aim the cone at anybody. Generally, we like to have 5 or 6 feet away, using a wedge, a gauze, and a trachea tube to position the film. Clarence Sitzman Clarence is up in Fort Collins? Anyway, he's in Colorado. He came up with this lead-lined screen. I think this is available in Ships Dental Labs has these now. That it's a protection, lead-line protection, so you put it right up against the cone, and it's going to prevent scatter from going into the audience, as we say. But we always say shooting x-ray, something like that, giving people to take a look and see what's going on and get out of the way if they're in the way. If they still don't move and they look like they're going to get a dose, we make them move and get out of there right now. Placing the film. Make sure the plastic side is toward the film or subject or cone. The paper side away from the subject or cone. Try to get maximum amount of root and bone. I see a lot of people will do this, where they'll take the film and they'll try to edge it as close to the teeth as possible, and they have all this film sticking out, or the sensor in this case, sensor sticking out in the air. Well, we know what air looks like, don't we? It's black, right? No need to x-ray air. Shove that guy in there. Get that in there. Get the most root and bone in. Don't get hung up on trying to get it as close as possible, because we use a bisecting angle technique to get out of that. So make sure you have proper sizes toward the subject and cone. That's important as well. Try to get maximum amount of root and bone. So don't take a radiograph of the air. Now, parallel technique is something that we use, or you use day in and day out in general practice. You have a broken femur. Put the femur on the x-ray table. The femur is parallel with the plate that you're taking. You can do this in veterinary dentistry when you're taking a radiograph of the mandible, and you can do that when you're taking an x-ray of the nasal cavity. So posterior mandible and nasal cavity are two areas where we can get a parallel technique. But we can't do it when there are structures that will not allow a parallel structure to get in there. So here's our parallel technique with a digital sensor. Actually, with a skull, a digital sensor with a cat, and then the resulting x-ray that we're getting. So our film is placed alongside the tongue and the mandible. The problem then being that we have this, ideally if we were going to place the film, being able to get it right up against here, we would be aiming right in here, but we're going to aim at something called the bisecting angle. So if this is the plane of the film, this is the plane of the film, we're aiming right halfway between that. This is a theory. So the bisecting angle technique, see we have now, we can't, because of the palate right here, plane of the film, plane of the tooth, we're going to make our imaginary line between halfway between the film and the tooth. That's what we're aiming at. So posterior maxilla, anterior mandible, the areas you're going to be doing it. I think it helps to step back and look at what's happening here. If we're aiming at the tooth, the x-rays may totally miss the film. We're going to get an elongated tooth. This is the same as if the sun were up early in the morning. You're going to cast a long shadow. The sun is aiming at you, so you get a long shadow. If you're aiming at the film, you're going to get a foreshortened shadow. You're going to get foreshortening. X-rays may miss the tooth, so to speak. Shortens the tooth. So this sun overhead at noon casts a very short shadow. So the bisecting angle is an imaginary line that bisects the angle between the tooth and the x-ray film. And you aim the x-ray cone at this angle. Simplified version, if I'm using film, I'm going to place that film right in the mouth, just squarely right in the center of the mouth. I'm not going to worry about angling it toward the tooth or anything like that. Just right in there. For maxillary posterior, equally across the maxilla, don't worry about angling the film as close as possible. And then I'm going to aim my x-ray cone at a 45-degree angle. And this is going to give me the premolars and molars in the back. So you set up the film or sensor, aim at the patient rather than at the film. So here's the plane of the tooth, plane of the film, imaginary bisecting angle. Now I'm normally taking x-rays on the lateral recumbency. I've just done this to illustrate, and as a result, we're getting some bending of the film. If I was really taking this x-ray, I could take a tongue depressor and put it on there and stop that bending from happening. But otherwise, I'm just placing it in the jaw like this. With a sensor, placing it, so just the tip of the sensor is on the cusp of the teeth. ...45-degree angle. That's molars and premolars. If I'm taking a maxillary anterior, 45-degree angles, canines and incisors. Plane of the film, plane of the teeth, bisecting angle, aiming the cone at that bisecting angle. And here we are with a model. Here we are with the cat. 45-degree angle, canines and incisors. Mandibular anterior, because the canine teeth and incisors are slightly raked more forward on the mandible, we don't have to go to the 45, we go to a 20-degree angle or a 70-degree angle. So it's a 20-degree angle from the straight up and down, 70-degree angle from the mandible. So there's the plane of the tooth. Plane of the film, plane of the film, plane of the tooth, bisecting angle. And here we are, film, or sensor. In this case, I'm placing it right on top of the tongue. It's hard to get it underneath the tongue in this situation. Taking an x-ray of the tongue is no big problem. Unless it has calcinosis cutis or something like that, it's not a real big issue. Complete studies, right and left posterior maxillary, right and left posterior mandible, anterior maxillary, anterior mandible. Canine teeth, 45 degrees from the front, 45 degrees from the side, if we want to aim right and focus on a canine tooth. I also give good nasal. We also use a feline extraoral technique. This is in cats because of the zygoma, and not all cats, it's some cats. I usually will try the intraoral first. If the intraoral is not getting me there, I'll go ahead and use the extraoral. So here we are, and I've taken, this is the one time I'll use a mouth gag. I've cut off the tip of the syringe cap, needle cap. Oops. Sorry. Okay. The sensor is underneath the cat here. We've raised this up about an inch. It might help to take and put a little one-inch tape between the mandible and the table. And so his head is slightly tilted. And now we're skylining the palate. And that's going to give us the extraoral view. Maxillary fourth premolar. What we're going to do here, and this is the view that you're getting on there, just to give you the idea, from the 45 degrees from the side. Now, one problem that we can have with maxillary fourth premolar is the recognition of multi-rooted teeth. And what we have to do is take additional radiographs. So, everybody, your right hand, hold it up in front of you like I'm holding my right hand, like so. So, I have my index finger closest to me, my middle finger is away from me, my thumb is on my left side, all right? Everybody got that? So this is the mesial root, that's the palatal root, the middle finger is the palatal root, the back finger is the distal root. So which tooth is this? This is the fourth premolar, which side? Be the right side, right side. It's the right side. You got to hold it like that. The right side. All right. Now, I want you to take now, line them up so you can't see your middle finger. Your index finger is blocking the view of your middle finger. Now, move your head to the right. What happens? To the right. Your middle finger now comes more forward. This is called the slob rule. Same lingual, opposite buccal. So, when we move our, take another x-ray, so here we are, can't see them, they're combined together, same lingual, opposite buccal. Now we're using lingual and palatal interchangeably. So the lingual or the palatal root moves in the same direction as the x-ray cone moves when we take a second x-ray. So we've got this x-ray here, we just move, in this case, we move the cone forward or to the, this is a left tooth, so it would be to the left of the patient, or forward, or to your right, actually. No, to your left. Really confusing you now. It's the left side, so we're moving it forward. And the palatal or lingual root will appear to move forward. So simply what we're doing is just moving our x-ray unit, repositioning the unit forward. And taking another x-ray. And the lingual root is going to move forward. Same lingual, opposite buccal. The buccal root is going to move to the middle. It's going to be the back root. So now we can isolate and identify which root is which root. And it's called the slob rule. Nope, don't understand. You got to do this again. If you don't understand, just go back to this. Line them up. Move your head forward and you'll see, you know, you're going the wrong, move your head forward, move your head to the right. You're holding your right hand up, move your head to the right, and you'll see that the middle finger is going to move forward. The index finger, representing the mesial root, is going to move backwards or toward the middle. Practice taking x-rays. Skulls Unlimited is a great source of skulls. I don't know if they're going to be here or not. I've seen them in a lot of meetings. And they've got skulls that have got some great pathology in them, and they also have some normal skulls, but they're just great for practicing taking your x-ray technique. Don't learn how to take x-rays on a live patient. That's just a lesson for frustration. So master using skulls. Also, using a flashlight to help learn where the beam is going is another cool thing to do. Complications in taking radiographs can be the improper settings of machines, KVP, a blurring of the image can happen if the x-ray head is moving or the patient's moving, not under anesthesia enough, movement of the subject, elongation of the subject. What's going to cause that? Aiming at the tooth too much, right? So you have to aim at the film more. So if cone is aimed too much at the subject or tooth. Foreshortening, aiming too much at the film. Not in proper position. Recognition of parts of multi-rooted teeth. Take one additional radiograph, moving machine, the head mesial or distal. Remember the slob rule. Same lingual, opposite buckle. Film positioning or processing. We can use a standard hand tack. The size 4 films can be developed in most of your automatic processors. Why you would do that, I don't know. It would take too long. The size 2 films sometimes do. Most of the time, they just go to Never Never Land. So I wouldn't try it. And I would just use a chair-side darkroom or something like this if you're going to stick with film. Two-step rapid processing solution, do it within a minute or so. You're going to stir the solution, open the film. If you're using film still, make sure you develop the film. Don't develop the paper. How many of you have developed paper? Doesn't work, does it? Don't touch the undeveloped film. Place directly on the clip. Remove all the paper. Don't develop the paper. It's kind of like the Ice Speed of Tomcat Club. 5 seconds in water, if you read the directions, not really the same water as Fixer, but it's everybody ignores that step, and that's supposed to soften the emulsion, but just put it right in the developer for 15 seconds to begin with. Dip 5 times in a water rinse, and then in your Fixer, agitate it. Rinse minimum 10 minutes, best if longer, best if running water. If under-rinsed, it'll turn discolor in several weeks or months. Complications in developing we get into. Film is clear. This is called the shell game, where you develop the wrong film. That would be good news, no radiation. What's the bad news? Broken x-ray unit. I suppose it could be unplugged or something like that, but usually they hear it go deep and nothing happens, and that's a broken machine. So broken machine or shell game. Film is all black. Means that it's severely overexposed, or you have a light leak in your chair-side darkroom, or the wrong filter for the film speed. There's different speeds of film that require different colors of the filters. Film is light with poor contrast, means it's underexposed. Could be too little time. Setting MA or KV, if there's settings for MA and KV, most x-ray, dental x-ray units only set your time, but you still can find some that have MA or KVP settings. And there's actually some newer ones that are called digital or DC x-ray units that have where you can set the MA and KVP. Improper distance, if it's too far away. The button is released too quickly. Underdeveloping can be caused by low temperature. It's temperature sensitive, so if the solutions are too cold, you're going to get it blanched out like this. Weak developer solution. Film was light with markings. This is really cool. How do you do this? Anybody know? These real cool markings, little honeycomb like beehive x-rays. Wrong side, yeah, upside down. We're taking a picture of lead here. So shooting through lead, that's how that was taken. Not too practical, but pretty cool. Film's all black, again, severely overexposed. Light leak in chair side darkroom, wrong filter for film. Exposed but dark, usually overexposed, overdeveloped. Film is fogged. This was an x-ray that was taken when we just purposely took an unexposed film, created a leak in the chair side darkroom. This is the result of what we have there. Make sure you have the right speed, EP versus DF. If you're not using the right filter, you're going to have red filter for EP is what you want to use, orange filter for DF. If you're using the wrong filter, it's going to overexpose the film. Inadequate fixing turns it brown. Inadequate rinsing turns it green. And these are something, the fixing and the developing is something you usually don't find out until 6 months later and you go back and look at the x-ray again and you see this and you kind of go, oh, shoot. Splotches on film. This is an inadequate rinsing of the fixer off the clips. So failure to adequately rinse. Make sure you're disposing your solutions properly. We don't want to disturb our friends in the sea by adding silver into the ocean, into our environment. So it needs to be properly disposed of like you dispose your regular developing solutions. Film storage, when we used to use film, we had these envelopes here, and we'd get size 13 envelopes. And these stack neatly straight up and down in the sovereign syringe boxes, and then we would just put them into file folders. But not having taken film in a long time, which, number 12 envelopes, I'm sorry, not number 13. Storage of digital films locally versus network. The network has a nice advantage if your backup system's set up that way, making sure you're always backed up. It's always made easier with Wi-Fi networking. You can set up monitors and view screens and exam rooms and reception areas so we can take and show our clients the x-rays on our screens. All right, and there's our x-ray of our only patient that I've had except the sensor. Well, we actually made a special Lexan sensor for her that we knew that she couldn't crunch down on it. That we didn't want to, and we sent it to them ahead of time so that if it broke, it broke without the sensor being in there. Questions? We got a break coming up. 7 minutes, looks like. Picked up from in 2 minutes. What? I have 3:53. We start at 4 o'clock? Oh, 2 minutes more for questions, you're saying. Okay. Questions? We're going to talk next hour on interpretation. And so I'm going to go through how I look at films, how I interpret, then we're going to go through a bunch of cases that you get to participate in this whole decision-making ideas. Thank you.